Hello, this is Jill Pasternak. Welcome to Crossover, the program that explores the universal language, music.
Per la scoccia si diffonda l'ira mio, la mia vendetta, per la scoccia si diffonda, ove fiera intorno abbonda, come fiera intorno abbonda, come l'anima massa.
Well, we have a very distinguished guest with us today. I use that word very carefully because he is Thomas Hampson, baritone, world-renowned singer, and highly acclaimed by, I guess, all critics.
Welcome. Oh, let's not get the critics a good morning. let's leave the critics to their business.
Welcome, Tom Hampson, to WRTI and Crossover. Well, you have this incredible career that you have been. How many years now have you been singing?
Oh, just quite a few.
Quite a few. You're from Spokane, Washington.
Spokane, Washington, yes. Is where I come from. Yeah.
Right, but currently living for the last many years, I guess, in Vienna.
Yeah, you know, it's very funny. I've lived in Europe. My career started over there in 1981. In Europe, I had done quite a bit of work over here, and at the immediate same time, I started in Düsseldorf, Germany. In 1982, Richard Gaddis had already invited me back to St. Louis Opera, where we had that very famous Così fan tutte with Jonathan Miller and Calvin Simmons. And so really from the get-go, I had an enormous stroke of fortune that I, you know, was going up both ladders of the world of opera and classical music at the same time, in Europe building a career, but at the same time coming over here, and already by 1986 had made my Met debut.
So spectacular one too.
Yeah, well, it's a great memory.
Yeah, it's a great, well, and of course you never stopped learning, you never stopped advancing your knowledge, certainly of music, and I guess we should certainly start talking about the wonderful new, very interesting effort that you're involved in, mm-hmm. bringing the American song to the world.
Right. Right.
How about nothing, that? Is that
nothing
grandiose
like a mission,
enough?
You know?
Yes, right.
yeah, right. Well, you know, I have sung American song a lot over the years and have been always very passionate about it. And this is a very visible collaboration between the Library of Congress and myself. And but it's actually been brewing and gestating for several years, both for me as a performer, but also my relationship with the Library of Congress, and specifically with James Billington, the Librarian of Congress, who is, of course, one of the favorite and loved native sons of Philadelphia. So what we've launched here is actually the most visible part of what our collaboration really started, and that was how can we build an accessible website database at the library that helps people understand or access treasures of American poetry and American music that live in this enormous institution, the greatest and largest public library in the world, the Library of Congress. Billington is, of course, very enthusiastic about the project and all of his projects. He's actually an incredibly infectious professor. You know, he can inspire you to all sorts of things. But he's also been frustrated with how sometimes a library can seem rather impersonal. It's just this enormous repository that can be rather austere. And so his foresight was really quite amazing about 10 years ago. I hope it's 10 years ago. I'm not exactly sure when. But he actually brilliantly saw the future and generated a great deal of support from Congress and a great deal of money and built this enormous website and simply made the Library of Congress available to the world in this free, fantastically designed and ever-growing website. He's been very, very instrumental in bringing the Library of Congress into the digital age, and that's very exciting. So I sort of slip in my little foot there. I'm a great, passionate library goer.
The Library of Congress, of course, as you say, this, when you say that to the normal individual mm-hmm. who knows absolutely nothing about it, mm-hmm. one envisions this huge, you know, monument mm-hmm. in Washington, and that things are in there, but are they accessible to the general public? So what you're saying, of course, is that you can access this material on the web.
They are accessible. I mean, I'm not a spokesman for the Library of Congress other than vicariously and out of passion. But in fact, anything that's in the Library of Congress is the property of the American people. And that's also one of the great things about this program. This is not about designing something and presenting it or selling it to people. It's essentially figuring out, you know, taking the responsibility on our part to say, this belongs to everybody. If it's not being accessed or if it's not known, it's because we haven't done our work. And it's just to make some things more reachable. You can go to the Adams Building or the Jefferson Building or any other building down there. There's like three or four of them, mm-hmm. and Madison Building, and you know, go through the process. The process is rather, I don't want to put anybody off, but it
involved,
can be daunting.
Yeah.
It's very involved. I haven't had to go through that because I get down there and meet somebody and they take me to where I need to go, and it's very nice. But the music room, once you get through these endless corridors of mm-hmm. faceless doors, once you go through a couple of those doors, it's an amazingly fantastic and fascinating place to be. The web, you know, the new technology is a backbone to this project. It's a backbone to my foundation, which is about song and poetry and, you know, preserving and coalescing things, as it were.
Now, if you're talking about American song, are you talking about classical?
I am talking, you know, that's a very important point. Song in America is nothing that Americans need to hear about again. We sing and sing and sing. And as much as I love everything from our earliest roots to our most contemporary popular songwriters, this particular project is about what I call concert song in America. And I say that because I want to leave myself a few side doors open to some of the repertoire I want to get to, but also because I think the phrase art song just carries baggage with it,
right.
and it's a good baggage, and I use it all the time, and I know what people mean and so forth. But I just have landed on this idea of concert song, and the other reason I've landed on it because it lets me talk about the roots of concert song. Because a concert does not necessarily mean Penguin standing on a stage mm-hmm. in front of 2,000 people. You know, concerts for Stephen Foster were the porch, they were the church, they were the library, they were whatever meeting hall, whatever it could be. They're very private. There's a whole notion to public performance that has gotten terribly stereotyped because of the industry. And that's fine. That's all natural and that's good. But let's talk about what it is. Song is the sharing of emotional experiences that are essentially based on some sort of contemporary of the time, psychological or historical perspective, something that happened to somebody who it becomes manifest in words. The words are symbols of what happened. People remember how they felt about it. And that's what we exchange in a concert. We exchange emotions and thoughts with one another.
We just heard Roses of Picardy, sung by our guest today, Thomas Hampson, with Armin Guzelimian at the piano. Well, I think, though, for me, I would think of, as you say, Stephen Foster, some of the very early, the songs around the 90s, the late 1890s and so on. But don't you think that the American musical theater is very, very much a part of that?
Oh, without a question. And that's why I leave these side doors open. I mean, you can't. Victor Herbert wrote some really wonderful songs.
And what about things like Oklahoma? What about Carousel? What about those?
I guess I will get to that, and I have done a great deal of that work in what that huge industry push called crossover in classical music along, 10, 15 years ago.
It actually was never crossover.
Well, not for an American, it wasn't crossover. I never quite knew which way we were crossing. and I didn't do it to make myself popular or because I thought, we should pander down to this music. I did it because Annie, get your gun. I know Frank Butler. Mm-hmm. I know Fred Graham. Sure. I know these guys. These are people I went to school with, probably a little parts of me in every one of them. So I really enjoy this. But what we're now talking about in musical theater, we're talking about excerpts from theater works. And while they do contain isolated moments and there are songs that you can lift and outtakes of songs, when I think about Jerome Kern, You Are Love or something. Fantastic songs.
Showboat,
exactly.
Which was very much a classical style.
Yeah, but and exactly. Yes. I mean, there's so many. There's so many different ways we can go on.
Yeah, it's changed.
Because the classical music theater of the early days, the training of those singers and the training of opera singers was probably closer allied.
Yes, of course.
Today, it's a different industry. Yes. It has a different thrust. The training and the background is different. I personally, if anybody knows me, they know this for a fact. I don't like these compartments. I don't like the Fach mentality. I really am just interested in what I can sing and what people should sing. This project and my emphasis right now, just to get back to the point, is more about the concert song, where the first big side door I include, of course, are folk songs, as well as arrangements of folk songs. As much this project, it's a very ambitious project, and the ambitiousness and scope of it is not possible to see in just the concert tour alone that I'm doing with the library that's getting a lot of attention is so public. But it's as much about our poets and our history as it is this or that composer.
Tom Hampson with the traditional The Erie Canal.
My thesis, if you will, about American song is that to look for our Schubert or our Brahms or our Tchaikovsky or our Mahler is a complete and utter waste of time. I think it's very much more to the heart of the history and the storytelling of America and the awakening of what it is to be an America and an American in America, regardless of your race or your even birthplace. This American narration is to be found in our poets, found in our history, and the history of American song just narrates that process so beautifully. And if we look at sort of 10 and 15 year periods of time, movements, fads, thought processes, morals, whether it's the temperance movement or the transcendentalists, whatever particular kind of the opening of the West, there's just so much about this narration of America becoming America, right up to the contemporary time, is still going on, that is encased in this poetry, in this music, and in these songs. And
you're talking again about a lot of choral singing, I think.
Oh, there's a lot of choral music in it, right? Absolutely, mm-hmm. They manifest themselves in different genres, and I think that, you know, it's all part of the American Memory Program as well, with the National Endowment of the Humanities, and that also based in the Library of Congress. So it's just it's not a finger wagging kind of project at all. In fact, it's actually throwing a big warm blanket around everybody. But
well, it's also
anything, it's accessibility.
Open-ended.
It's very open ended.
Yeah.
And it's, I hope, you know, yes, I have a lot of enthusiasm for it, and I know an awful lot about a repertoire, and I learn every day even more, and it's just absolutely endless. There's no possible way you can live long enough to sing all the wonderful songs that have been written in this country.
Molly, do you love me? Can the morning beam love a lowly floweret living in its gleam? Let one gentle whisper all my doubts destroy. Let the dreamy rapture turn to waking. Molly, do you love me? Tell me true. Molly, do you love me? Love as I.
Music from the pen of Stephen Foster. Molly, do you love me? Thomas Hampson, baritone. Jay Unger, violin. Molly Mason, guitar.
Is the repertoire narrow? Has it gotten narrow? Yes, it's gotten narrow.
You really don't hear much.
Well, you don't really hear
concert.
That much. And that's been kind of fun to program. But I'm actually even surprised at the foreignness in some communities to the idea of a person standing with a piano and a pianist on a stage singing to a bunch of people. That seems to also have become even drifted even more and more away from the mainstream of concert going.
It's not as grandiose. It's not as large as what we're used to. Of course, television has done that to us. And if you grew up in the television age, of course, and didn't go to concerts, a recital is poorly attended. In most cases,
a lot of times, yeah.
In many, many cases, even if the it doesn't mean if you're a star, you may have, you know, the star quality, but to go to a recital and hear someone sing with a pianist, people, they're not kind of turned on. The general public, I'm speaking about, not
right.
The aficionado, you know, the musician that is looking for something, but it's not big enough. It's not.
It's
too
not an
intimate.
Event.
Yes.
Well, however, we shouldn't talk about that in a negative way. It's actually the other way. It's actually a positive way because it's a personal experience. These songs and this repertoire and these stories belong to each and every one of us. And the forum of the recital perhaps is unusual to somebody. In fact, some people accuse classical music of being so withdrawn or somehow elevated or you have to be into it. And I actually think a lot of the problems with the recital is it's terribly emotional. It's terribly in your face. You must interact. The public must interact with this repertoire. You're not going to have the recital experience unless you take the words seriously, unless you take the setting of those words musically seriously. It's not something you have to get into. It's something you have to be open to. And there's a significant difference. But we have gotten away from, you know, gotten away. What does that mean? That tradition, that musical experience has not stayed as mainstream. And the fact that it's driven mostly by celebrity is one, thank God it can still be driven by celebrity. But two, the chamber music and song repertoire will eventually, well, it'll always be there because that's just part and parcel of our instinct to tell our story and be alive. But But as a genre, it can only be driven by the repertoire. It cannot just stay alive by.
So you're talking about,
celebrity.
Of course, Copland. You're talking about Barber. You're talking about Ned Roram, probably.
Yeah, those are some of the actually the big names.
The
but
big
I'm
names.
Also talking about the Charles Griffiths of the turn of the century,
wonderful.
The Edward McDowell, the
okay.
Certainly Ives. But then you know another layer under, we could go to say Charles Loeffler, under
yes.
meaning in terms of awareness anymore. Great, wonderful H.H. Beach, one of the first
yes,
great women
know.
Composers
yeah,
in the country. John Alden Carpenter. One of
right.
my personal favorites, Deems Taylor, you know, Virgil Thompson.
Yes.
These people are enormously important to the development of the consciousness of this country to classical music, but also in and of themselves wonderful composers.
I saw a ship a-sailing, with emeralds and rubies and sapphires in her hull. And a bo'sun in a blue coat hauling at the railing, piping through a silver call that had a chain of gold. The summer wind was falling and the tall ship rolled. I saw a ship a-steering, with roses in red thread worked upon the sails, with sacks of purple amethysts, the spoils of buccaneering, skins of musky yellow wine, and silks in bales. Her merry men were cheering, calling on the brave.
An old song re-sung. Music by Charles Tomlinson Griffiths to the poetry of John Mansfield, Thomas Hampson, baritone performing.
In the 21st century, I would like to think that we are becoming more eclectic. We're becoming more, hopefully we'll be more open to different ways that different people did things without being so ready to say, to be condemning or to be negative and say, oh, well, that's just a copying of the Impressionists, or that's too much the German school, or that's the this or that's the that.
Well, one can't get away from that, though, the influence of the European school, because many composers of that era studied in Europe and they brought those things back with them. And then again, as you say, we have the ethnic mix
right.
there. So, I mean, you can't, I guess what you're saying, America really is. I mean, that sounds trite, but it is a melting pot, and you cannot get away from all those different influences.
Right.
So that is very American.
Very American. Also, one of my favorites is William Grant Still, you mm-hmm. know, this wonderful
yes,
African-American composer. I think the first music director of the Hollywood Bowl, you know, lived most of his life in a time when he couldn't ride the bus with white people. And yet
yes.
we have this amazing collection of music. He's actually having a kind of a renaissance.
Kind of a renaissance. Yeah, we're doing a
Thank
lot
God.
Of
this.
Thank God.
I mean, it's such a wonderful mm-hmm. composer. I'm just absolutely crazy about
now,
this man.
The tour that you're doing
yes.
is specifically recital.
It is absolutely concert song,
okay.
piano,
but
voice.
But it is
recitals.
Part of, as you say, a much larger effort that's being, you know, put forth. In other words, this is part of the whole. What is it called? The Creativity Across America.
Well, yeah, this is the Library of Congress program that James Billington instituted, and I think it's called Creativity in America. And there is certainly a kind of launching date out there in 2007, the fall of 2007, when the renovation of the Mall, which is this huge area between the Capitol building
right.
and the Library of Congress, will open, and with subterranean tunnels and
That's
presentations
awesome.
And all that, and it will link and give a new life to this glorious building called the Jefferson Building, which is the original home of the Library of Congress, where Jefferson was the first place where his library, which started the Library of Congress, he donated it or sold it actually to the Congress. And it's a beautiful, beautiful building. And it has in it one of the most spectacular, beautiful, sort of our Wigmore Hall, really,
mm-hmm.
Called the Elizabeth Sprague Coolidge Hall, Recital
Who
Hall.
Which was very important in commissioning music.
Some of the most major works
music,
in the,
yes.
you know, Appalachian Spring, Chanson mm-hmm. Ma de Casse,
yes.
to name two of the most famous of, I think, you know, well into the 70s that she personally commissioned, and they had the world premiere in Sprague Coolidge. I would like to see a series there that I can help support, not only to sing, but just to simply design.
Now, for them. You also teach, don't you?
I do give a lot of classes. I don't have a studio. I just travel too much and I'm too undependable. But I do like to do master classes, yeah. And I work every year at Curtis.
You will certainly bring this into your work.
Yes, absolutely. No, there's all sorts of, there's just wonderful facets. I look at this project as not so much something new as perhaps just my time and a time that we can draw together already existing momentums. There's several new centers for American music across the country. One that I've been involved with very, very closely is the University of Pittsburgh with Dean Root. And, of course, that's also where the Stephen Foster Memorial is. That's kind of probably my mantra is, you know, connecting the dots. I like to connect them myself. I love to figure out, you know,
sequential.
Yeah, sequential events. Yeah. Thank you very much. How do you say in your country?
Oh, that's the way. I was going to say, you know, you're of course obviously fluent in German.
Yeah.
And other languages because of
some lunch Italian.
Yeah,
you know?
That's all that's important, really. Speaking of which, what happens to the rest of what you do?
Well, that's a good point, right? Everything's still—it's not like something else has been put on the back burner. It's actually I've just added another burner to my stove,
and so I'm just
kind of running around here. This whole tour came as things are, you know. You plan and plan, and all of a sudden, either it falls apart or it just gets this enormous rocket ship, and you know, sort of hang onto your hat. And that's kind of how this happened. We booked it very, very late, and you know, thank goodness so many presenters came in with us, and Congress has been very generous, and a lot of the politicians, legislators in their different districts have been very supportive. And this is not just a one-year thing. We're looking at a continuous project, and the more I can now, once I don't like to ask anybody to do something I haven't done myself and know where the problems are, but I'm now in a position where I can go back to some of my colleagues who also sing a lot of American songs. There's a lot of us that are just terribly passionate about this material. And invite them in on it. So the performing side, I think, will take care of itself. The database is, of course, a much more complex issue. I hope by the end of the year or middle of the spring, at least, we'll see some significant uploading onto a website where people can connect their own dots. I not only like to connect my dots, I like to offer people places where they can connect theirs. That's the whole point behind my foundation and my website. If you go to a Hampson concert, you can go to my website, www.hampsong.com, or thomashampson.com. And any program I do, actually already sitting on the web is the one for Sunday here in Philadelphia. All the texts, if they need translations, their translations, all my programs over the last 9 years are up for PDF download if you want to do that. So,
well, you'll also be on our website,
WRTI.org.
That's right, in our interview. However, you also have made an album. Now, is this specifically the Song of America?
The Song of America, it is an accompanying CD with a tour, kind of a new focus, new cover. It is all pre-recorded material. It comes from three albums that one of them or two of them are not even available anymore, so I was very excited to get them back out. Called Old Song Resung was the first album I made of American song. And the second one was then Stephen Foster, Beautiful Dreamer.
I Got Me a Cat? I Bought Me a Cat?
Well, no, these are all EMI. And then the third one is the To the Soul, which was various composers on Walt Whitman texts. And those are all EMI releases. Then I've done a couple of others. I did the Copland Folk Songs with the St. Paul Chamber Orchestra. Great fun.
I love the way you do that.
I just love it.
You have your personality, and you've got humor.
And the orchestra and Hugh Wolf. That was a lot of fun. We had a lot of fun making that record.
Bought me a cat. My cat needs me. I fed my cat under yonder tree. My cat says, fiddle-i-fee. I bought me a duck, my duck pleased me. I fed my duck under yonder tree. My duck says, quack, quack. My cat says, fiddle-i-fee. I bought me a goose, my goose pleased me. I fed my goose under yonder tree. My goose says, quack, quack. My duck says, quack, quack. My cat says, fiddle-i-fee.
I bought me a hen needs me. I fed my hen under yonder tree. My hen says, shimmy, shake, my goose says, quack, quack. My duck says, quack, quack. My cat says, feed like me. I bought me a pig, my pig needs me. I fed my pig under yonder tree. My pig says, griffin, griffin. My hen says, shimmy, shake, my goose says, quack, quack. My duck says, quack, quack.
I think dawns on it as well, that the Don Upshaw with the Emily Dickinson poems of Copland, which is one of the most significant song cycles in American history, without question.
Now, this is just between you and me, Eleanor Remick Warren. You did, of course, some work of hers.
What a wonderful chapter of you know, non-mainstream creativity in America.
Yes.
You know, what a glorious woman
Song
died
Earth,
in her 90s.
Yeah.
That's what brought my good friend Virginia Borden together with me, or I met her for the first time, and she's been so helpful and just, you know, a backbone.
And you love Eleanor's music.
Oh, I really do love Eleanor's music. It's beautiful. The oratorios is where I first met her, and then Virginia said, well, you know, these are quite good songs. And her history is so wonderful. All these wonderful people that she played
in Hollywood,
for, you know.
Too, also,
and in Hollywood and all the, you know, Matzenauer, that she went on tour with Richard Crooks and very good friends with Lawrence Tibbett, one of my great idols. You know, so she played a lot. And I must say, I'm very grateful that the family bequeathed her library, her song library to me. And so I have these first editions of these glorious songs with her markings, and there's she'll have RC did it this phrase and LT did it another way.
Yeah.
I mean, it's so much fun.
And
she wrote such beautiful songs.
Right, she did. Well, do you think she'll be included in that?
She's in this.
She has
a God Be in My Heart is a wonderful song. I recorded We Two of Walt Whitman. There's three or four other really fantastic. The God Be in My Heart is a wonderful song. It's actually on 16th century medieval poetry. It's kind of like a George Herbert kind of poem, but it's not his. That whole second group on the program is actually kind of from Flanders Fields to Looking Glass River to God Be in My Heart to Tiger Tiger, Virgil Thompson on William Blake poetry, and ending with Lenny Bernstein's To What You Said.
Thomas Hampson, our guest today, singing To What You Said, music of Leonard Bernstein to the words of Walt Whitman, Craig Rutenberg, pianist.
There are various religious, not even religious, there are various spiritual attitudes to God and nature that I'm very passionate about, that I think is the backbone of American thought. I think we've found ourselves in kind of a football club religion mentality, my club's better than your club, when really the tolerance and respect of religious thought, especially spiritual essence of thought, is what made this country unique in its birthing. And it's I love going through and finding various poets and composers that we don't think of necessarily as spiritual people that all of them, practically every composer and poet that I know, had some moment they said, well, I think about God and nature like this. And I find that very, very beautiful.
And maybe we need some reminding of that.
Well, I think we could just, you know, settle down here a little bit.
Mm-hmm. Cool it.
Put the baseball bats down.
Chill out a little bit. Well, Tom, we could talk to you forever.
Oh, no,
and
don't.
What we'll do is demand a return engagement.
Oh, that's very kind.
But for now, then, Song of America is a companion piece for this wonderful tour that you're doing, the Library of Congress Song of America. It's a community outreach, I guess. A lot of the activities that are involved with that are going to be including communities that contribute things to.
What's fantastic about this, I know we want to get off this, but it is truly a community outreach, and what we're doing is, and that's what's so exciting. You go to these communities, and the communities actually provide the infrastructure that then the library can feed the material to. And that's been very important. We're not coming out of Washington mm-hmm. and planting something on top of Kansas City. Kansas City embraced this. That was the first one we did in November. That's why I reference it. Or in Philadelphia, we're a little bit off the holidays, so we're not having as much dialogue with the schools and so forth. We're having more people, private people that are involved in from the Madison Council or educational outreach or whatever. But it is about invigorating communities. It is not about a program that people can buy. And that's, to me, the brilliance and genius of the internet. The internet is good news. We're on the threshold of something so phenomenally invigorating to the liberal arts in this country and, quite frankly, to education in general. Maybe we will have a chance to actually truly provide people with a way to think openly about themselves and their lives and get on with this great dream called America.
Oh, those are final words. Very impressive. Wonderful to speak with you.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here. Appreciate it.